All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and telling you how to live your life and what you can and can't have in your possession or in your mouth or in your put into your own body. Because that's how they like to control us. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan, Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for president of the United States, currently in the race for governor of Texas. And today, I have an awesome guest with me, G.I. Mary Jane, who's a full-time activist and commander-in-chief at Platoon 420. Very, very awesome person. We're going to hear lots of great things about cannabis legalization and all kinds of other stuff that's going on and the types of activism that she's involved in. Really great stuff. But of course, before we get started, if you're watching the live streams, please remember to like and share and comment and ask your questions so we can answer them live. And of course, also head over to taxationistheft.info where you can get all of our really awesome swag and support our show. And make sure you head over to YouTube also and make sure to like and subscribe our channel because we have some other videos there aside from this podcast that are really awesome. Some short content on specific issues and all kinds of other great stuff. How you cannot pay your taxes. Fun stuff. Anyways, on to the show. Mary Jane, welcome. How's it going?
I'm doing awesome, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love to learn how to not pay my taxes. Nobody has a good time with that.
Well, I hear you're kind
Thank you for your service and sharing it.
I hear you're kind of in an area where people aren't really paying taxes. You've got a lot of anarchy down there.
Yeah, I'm in a beautiful, depending on who you ask, Slab City, nestled in Imperial Valley, California. It's an old abandoned military base. There's slabs everywhere where camps of people have decided to kind of separate from society and come down here and do their own thing. There's a lot of separate camps. It's really like the most libertarian place I've ever visited. Only these people don't really know they're libertarian yet from what I've seen. But I'm here now, so we'll change that. It's rumored that this is a lawless town, but I can tell you the police drive through all the time. It's not like we're used to. They aren't approaching nonviolent citizens. If there's a violent scuffle going on, they may come on in. But otherwise, they're just kind of driving around with their flex. We're also in the Border Patrol territory. So there may not be local law enforcement here, but there's plenty of enforcement going around. There's even helicopters, the ghetto birds that fly overhead here a lot. But generally, it's a bunch of people working together, and if there's a problem, they prefer to deal with it on their own before getting enforcement involved. I mean, after all, who needs guys with guns if there's no guys with guns to begin with, right?
Right. Yeah, that sounds like that sounds pretty amazing. And I've read some things about that place before, and I've seen like I guess a couple people did like a documentary or something on it. It looks really amazing. But it also looks kind of like there's not not a whole lot of the luxuries of modern living that most people would expect. What's the actual living situation kind of like down? Like, do you get electricity, running water, those kind of things?
Yeah, well, it depends on what camp you're at. Right now I'm staying at a place they call California Ponderosa. This group, my traveling partner, Ganja Grunt, has been coming here for 6 years and has made a relationship with this family. Everybody's considered family here, myself included, the second I walked in the door. And they work hard every day. Right now, they're building a little lounge area in the common area. It's basically a courtyard of trailers and structures. With solar and running water, you just have to fill the water tank. There's power as long as you've got the solar pointing the right way. So, it's missing a lot of life's comforts, but I question whether those things are really comforts. I mean, you're either working hard to keep those things up, to keep the water full, to keep the electricity running in the house, to keep the house warm, or you're working for somebody else's dream at minimum wage and barely keeping those bills up. So you really have to question which right. one's harder. And of course, I guess that's all up to the individual.
Yeah, it's interesting that
I love it.
we kind of like those things are really luxury. Like in effect, what it is somebody is bringing water and energy from hundreds of miles away right into your house. And that's a luxury that like people kings 100 years ago didn't have that. And now we just kind of take it for granted. And it's like an expectation. And I think that's really interesting. And I think, I haven't gone that far, but I've gone, to like one example, I don't have a TV. That was probably my first step, was getting rid of TV. And it's like, moving out of big cities, it is like their life changes, but it's like you realize once you don't have these things and you just get used to it, that like it's really not that bad, and you actually have more time to do other things. So it's really interesting. So what brought you down there?
The weather. as you know, I travel via RV, and our little bus broke down in June in the middle of the New Mexico desert. Beautiful little spot. So that's cool. It's a house now. It just doesn't move. but that being said, the spot that's in is even more challenging than here in Slabs. It's further away from resources. And it's just not ready, whereas this is. So it really came down to escape the weather. And for me personally, with, you know, my activism, which honestly, I can't shut it off. It's just a thing that is always present in me. I'm dying to learn, you know, what it's really like down here. You asked about power and everything. And like I said, we have it here at this camp. But if you go a camp down the road a little bit, they're living in tents and they're completely happy with that. Me personally, I like tent living and in small doses. But if these people are happy and content living with that, they don't have others judging them. Not to the extent that society would judge somebody like that if they were living close to a city. So it's a lot more accepting out here.
Codes and making them build walls around their homes?
No, there is no building enforcement. Actually, I'm going to flip the camera around here and kind of give you a quick... Everything's kind of handmade out of trailers and repurposed things. They do their best to live as self-sustaining as possible. People still go to the grocery store, but there's only one grocery store in town. So whatever she has from the farms that are close to the area is what you get. And people are grateful for whatever they have. It's really beautiful. Now, people also have bars that they run. They have breakfast services that they run. Again, the government isn't aware of all these things. I don't want to blow anybody's spot because, of course, code enforcement is still a thing. But they tend to leave these folks alone a little bit more than in society. There is no building code here. So that's one thing nobody can get fined for. I did hear a story, though, that because of the pandemic, the police officers were showing up to certain camps about the social gathering restrictions.
Wow.
So... that's fun. COVID has introduced enforcement to this place that has never been here in the history of this spot. Thanks, COVID.
Wow.
It'll never end with that stuff, I swear.
Yeah. But that's still really interesting. And, you know, I think like a lot of that comes from the idea, if you go to like most cities, I just had on a mayor from a small town in Ohio who was actually a libertarian who just got elected. And, you know, she was saying things like, you know, she and the constituents like having speed limits on their roads. It's really interesting that, like, you still, but like the place you're in, it sounds like nobody's interested in having any kind of like you know, building codes or anything. And, you know, if you go to any other city, it's like if 100% of the people rejected the idea of speed limits or building codes or, you know, any particular thing, if that many of the people rejected it, I think that's when you would see an actual change. But when you have like even 50 or 60 or 70% or maybe even 30% who are willing to like call the police on their neighbor and say like, oh, yeah, he's building something in his backyard and he doesn't have a construction permit for it. Like that's enough to kind of get the ball rolling into this like state of tyranny that we live in.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, we're lucky to live in a society where if you live somewhere where you have building regulations and you don't want to, you can move. But those places without building code are so few and far between anymore. And I guess it really makes you wonder why. Seems like homeowners associations have kind of taken over things, whereas before you'd have settlers that landed in a spot, they built the community worked together with very libertarian values or else they wouldn't have survived. I don't know, I guess over time the wealthy landowners took over and told everybody what business as usual was supposed to look like. But I think especially with Gen Z and with the internet and how easy it is, you got people with YouTube channels that just, they broadcast their lives. They have no topic for their show. They just show how they live. And kids have this way of seeing different ways to live. For instance, I grew up in Baltimore City. It just like any other city in America, Chicago, Detroit, you name it. But I thought the entire world was like that until I started traveling. I mean, even when I got out of the city to the county, it blew my mind as a child. So we get used to what we're living in and we don't accept other things or we have fear of other things. But now we've got the internet and we get to see all these things and we get to see people living happily in these things. And I think this next generation is going to be more accepting of that. Hey, if you guys want to live over there in the middle of the desert, off solar and water tanks, be our guests. We won't complain about your garbage or we won't complain about your loud music. We'll just go over here where we like to be governed differently. And I think that's okay.
Right. That's interesting.
Nothing out there yet.
Yeah, and I see a lot of that too. I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles and we used to think like, yeah, the entire world must live in cities like this. It was just so weird to us that people still listened to like country music and like lived on farms. And then I did a little bit of road tripping just in California and found out that most of California is actually farmland. Like, it's like we're put into these bubbles and we're taught to think a certain way. And I think that's a lot, that's got a lot to do with it. Like it's our belief that, as you said, like this is how things are supposed to be and never really challenging that, never being taught to question authority or to question the status quo. We kind of end up in these patterns of just following somebody else's design.
Yeah, and it strikes me as odd because we're all born with that inquisitive nature, right? We want to know why the sky is blue, why the clouds form, why this, why that. For some of us, it continues. You continue to question, but a lot of people get discouraged and lose their voices before they even hit adulthood. I don't know. And again, back to the internet, you know, we're in an age where we've got this connectivity that we never had before. And I think it's going to help usher in a more, you know, united America, if not a global united society. And I don't mean that in the way of, you know, global governing, but just where human beings understand that even though we live different ways, we still kind of have those same values, right? Like basically what's laid out in the NAP. We don't want anybody hitting us. We don't have anybody hurting us. We don't have anybody stealing our things or killing us, right? But outside of that, with this education and these tools we have right at our fingertips that children have, you know, somebody like me, like I said, growing up in the city, if you'd have brought me through Slab City when I was 4, I probably would have been mortified. Like, this is so foreign and strange. Now it feels welcoming because of my traveling, because of seeing different places. And now you get to see all those things right there in real time. People are becoming a lot more accepting, you know, and we see it in the drug laws. how people are becoming a lot more accepting. Society is finally stepping into this. Look, you do what you want to do. Just be accountable for your actions no matter what. If you do something off color, you don't get to blame the substance. You don't get to blame your addiction. I wish that there was more help for people battling addiction, like more access to compassionate care facilities, but we'll get there. But we're turning that corner where we understand that we shouldn't demonize people or criminalize them for things that may be different as long as they're not hurting anybody else. I like seeing it. It's refreshing.
And that's interesting too. And I mean, you mentioned legalization, and we're making some progress there. We saw in the last election this week. Was that still this week? It feels like it's already been a long time because of all the crap that's going on.
I know.
We've seen, I think, Oregon legalized everything. Of course, the feds still say it's illegal, but the state of Oregon, Oregon's police, Oregon's sheriffs are not going to be arresting people and citing them, I guess, is what that comes down to. Which is great because, you know, as you said, like, people need to be able to get help. And if, you know, if it's illegal, if it's frowned upon, if you're being shamed because you've been using a certain substance, it's difficult for somebody to go out and get help. Whereas, like, you break your arm. Oh, well, okay, you weren't doing anything wrong, so you can go into the hospital and just say, I broke my arm, right? Like, I broke my arm skiing, right? Skiing wasn't bad, so you can go into the hospital. But we always see in movies, I don't know how true this is, in movies, you get shot and, like, you go to a vet because, like, you can't be on record and, like, you have to find some shady underground place to get your bullet pulled out. I know, that's fiction. But, like, it's the same kind of thing. If you overdose, your friends are worried, panicking, like, oh, shit, should we take him to the hospital? I don't know, man. We're, like, I still have stuff on me, man. Like, I'm out of here. They just leave and leave somebody for dead. Like, this kind of shit happens. But if it's not illegal, then people can get the help that they need. And I think that's, like, that's probably one of the, I mean, aside from the damage that the police have done and the government has done directly in you know, giving people criminal records, is preventing people from access to help when they need it. I think that's been, like, the biggest side effect of this.
Yeah, I agree. And you get absolutely shamed. I saw it firsthand. Somebody who was very close to me ended up taking his life March 31st, 2018, after three attempts. But his story was he had schizoaffective disorder, which is like schizophrenia, but a little worse from what I understand. He found street drugs to be helpful, primarily like LSD, which they're now finding is helpful for these things. Of course, too late for my man. But after his first suicide attempt, which was via overdose, the only thing he had in his system when I showed up to the hospital was pure carfentanil and weed. So again, this was an instance where this person was in so much desperation and so hounded by the stigma, you know, that he went out to end it. And that all started with being ripped off pharmaceuticals by the system. He was put in jail over 2 grams of weed and was taken off his prescription, tried to commit suicide right there in the hospital or in the prison. They didn't send him to hospital. Finally released him, and then you've got that whole 30-day rule, so couldn't get a refill without seeing a doctor. Can't see a doctor for 6 months. Meanwhile, you just have to live with this, right? But when the cops came into the hospital after this suicide attempt, they spit in his face. Jesus Christ, bloody, we're going to do this again. You fucking junkie. Blood. Like, they were verbally abusing this man who, resulting from his trauma, you know, was trying to end his own life. And police officers who were supposed to be there and be, I think in the beginning when it came to drugs and stuff, because that's how cops acted with alcohol, right? Like when Andy Griffith found Otis drunk, he sent him home or he let him sleep it off. And it was compassion. Right. It was, hey, buddy, you overdid it. Let's take care of this. Figure out why you're overdoing it. Maybe not overdo it again. But now there's just so much intended shame. And I even saw it within the community. Oh, who cares? He was just a junkie. And this is what we do to people. You know, it starts a lot of times with an addiction to prescription pills. You know, you get in a car accident, right? You hurt your back. They give you opioids. Eventually, we have an overregulated pharmaceutical industry that cuts you off of those pills. Your body already has a physical dependency. You end up looking for relief on the streets. A lot of these pharmaceuticals can actually kill you if you don't taper off. And doctors just don't. There's no regulation about tapering patients off, but there's regulations about cutting them off. And when they end up in the streets, we just get to brush it under the rug, call them a junkie, blame the drugs, and not think about, well, what did this person go through prior to that? So with drug legalization, and it's decriminalized in Oregon, not legalized. So it's just a, like a parking ticket offense would be. And actually what they do, if they catch you, they confiscate your substance, whatever it may be. And they give you the option to either pay a fine or go into a rehab facility, which I have mixed feelings about, because being in possession of something is very different than being addicted to something. And sending somebody without an addiction problem into an atmosphere with addicts can be very, very detrimental to their mental health. I mean, I'm no therapist, but I think any therapist would agree with that. You know, if you don't need to be somewhere and now you're in a room where somebody's telling you you have a problem with cocaine just because you and your buddies went out for the first weekend in 3 years, say, and the cop happened to catch you with it, it's not going to do good for that person in terms of their psyche and their self-esteem. So we were in Oregon on the Moore tour, and we visited Portland. Now, Portland decriminalized all substances quite a while ago. Baltimore is trying to do it right now. And I think that's the idea, is start with the city, do a little experiment. Then we can talk the state legislator into talking to us, I suppose. But what I saw in Portland was they just pulled the plug, but there was no bills going through the system that looked into mental health. Like I said, the person I told the story about, his name was Lenny. When we were looking for voluntary mental health treatment for him, it took 6 months to finally find a place that cost $1,500 a week. And he kept getting denied because he didn't have a court order or an addiction issue. So basically they were asking this guy to go put a dangerous substance in his body. If you come back and you piss dirty, we'll give you a bed. But if you're sitting here and you haven't done drugs for weeks and now you know you're ready to take that next step, we're going to make you backpedal first. That's the way our system's currently set up. And I think that's because there's a lack of facilities. So great. So if you're going to legalize or decriminalize all drugs, that's fine. But what I would have liked to see from Portland and from Oregon, and what I hope we can see in D.C. and Baltimore, because they are inevitably right behind Oregon on this, is that with that, there's a focus on, you know, more accessible mental health care. We simply don't have it. It's so hard to find a therapist. And I mean, in this day and age, you've got working professionals seeing therapists, and that's okay. It's not, that's something else that needs to be destigmatized. Like you said, you go to therapy, you go to self-help, and it gets frowned upon, but the businessman who goes to self-help classes and watches his TED talks and goes to his therapist, they don't get frowned upon. It's really a class warfare thing is kind of what I see anyway on the outside, you know. It's only shameful if you aren't living in that box, right?
Yeah, this is interesting that, like, you're so, like, I'm wondering if, if a clinic can charge $1,500 a week, why wouldn't there be, like, I would think, like, you'd have tons of entrepreneurs saying, hey, we're going to open more clinics. We're going to, you know, find, you know, whoever we need to work there as counselors and open more of these. I'm guessing, I don't know if you know too much about this, but I'm guessing there has to be some sort of regulation saying, you know, oh, we can only have so many of these, or some stupid regulations on what is needed to open one. Do you know anything about that?
I know it's state to state, and I found that out, you know, in my journey with Lenny, trying to find him that voluntary place. He lived in Pennsylvania, I lived in Maryland, right there on the line, like half hour away. But at the time, I was, you know, dealing with my own issues in therapy and stuff. And it wasn't too difficult for me in Maryland to find the help that I needed, but I was on state aid at the time. He was also on state aid and had a harder problem. This blew my mind. Looking into it, in Maryland, I couldn't have gone to a privately funded therapist. I've got to go to a state funded therapist if I'm on their insurance. So, fine, that makes sense. In Pennsylvania, it's the same way. However, they have some sort of regulation that says no mental health facilities can be state regulated. So that leaves everybody in Pennsylvania who's on state aid out in the cold. And you have to imagine somebody battling through mental health issues that have been undiagnosed and undertreated is probably living in poverty, just resulting from all their slips and stumbles along the way. So it makes it even harder for the group of people that need that help to access it. And again, from what I see, that's a state by state thing. I don't think there's any federal regulations on mental health care, and God, I don't want there to be. They'd fuck that up so bad. That'd be a nightmare. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, to the same point, there's, what is it? Hunter Biden. I wasn't even following the news to see what had happened with him, but I just started seeing memes everywhere. Memes as far as the eye could see of Hunter Biden with like crack pipes and all this other stuff. And I was just like, okay, what does this have to do with the election at all? It's like they were not only shaming this guy. And this was interesting too, because I have a friend who knows lots and lots of wealthy people, and they go through, she said there's this thing that they all do where, you know, they're so busy, they hire nannies or whatever to watch their kids. They don't raise their own kids. And so you have these kids that are like so distanced from their parents, but at the same time so connected, but they don't even learn. And like one of the things she was explaining was like, their parents got wealthy running businesses or, you know, being professionals or whatever, and their kids now don't even know how to manage money because they don't learn any of this stuff. They're just being raised by their nannies who come from a completely, you know, different world. And so you have Hunter Biden, who's basically in this situation, it looks like. He totally separated from, or, you know, maybe he learned a lot from his dad. I know a couple other guys who are actually related to senators, and they're just like, yeah, fuck that guy. He's a tyrant. You know, this kind of stuff. They hate what their parents do. But at the same time, I don't know, I guess Hunter's still somehow associated with some of the shenanigans going on with Joe's campaign. But I think it's like, it's really interesting that, you know, if he did something shady with like some other country and he's like screwing around with the election, fine, I get it. Attack him on that. But there was just so much, like, I had never heard of the guy, knew nothing about him. And I'm seeing all these memes going around about how he's a crackhead. And I'm just like, why are you even bringing this guy into the election? Like, that's just making things worse, I'm sure, for this guy.
And meanwhile, you're bringing him into the election. We're supposed to shame him for a picture that somebody took of him without his consent, okay, with a crack pipe hanging out of his mouth, and then without his consent published it. So making Hunter the victim, I mean, let's be real. He's got a crack pipe in his mouth, but it doesn't look like he's hurting anybody. And meanwhile, no one's bringing light to the fact that there's, you know, sexual allegations or sexual assault allegations against his father. Like, a crack pipe's a big deal, right? But sexual assault's not. I can't accept that that's where we've come, but we're looking at it. And I don't know. I hope things change with this election. It's crazy to me that it's taking so long, but the fact that it's this close and this polarized ought to wake some people up to something. Especially with two terms in a row where the majority of people can't say they were voting for something, they were voting against something. For instance, when Obama ran, people really liked him. They liked his principles. They were voting for him. Like him or not, people agreed with him and they had hope in his principles and his policy. We haven't had that on our debate stage for any group of people since Obama. Sure, you got your trumpets and everything, but I still think these are bandwagon people. They don't
Yeah, no,
they're extremists. They're radicals. They're rah-rahing.
Yeah, I think the number of really hardcore Trump supporters is relatively small. There are a lot of people who are just Republicans, or they're anti-Democrat, anti-Hillary, anti-Biden, and a lot of the people who are voting for Biden are the same thing, just Democrats. I've seen Biden talk a couple times, and I've heard him say a couple things which like sounded good at the moment, even though I know he totally didn't stand for it. But it's like you see most of the stuff that he's doing, and it's just like how could anybody you don't see people showing up to his rallies to support him or anything like that. It's just like it's just terrible.
And even with Trump, like you have people that are like, I'm a Democrat. I know what the Democratic Party stands for. Those are the principles that I identify with. Or same thing on the Republican side. Fine, great. But we have two people here that have violated their platforms time and time again, blatantly, especially Trump with all of his gun grabbing laws. I mean, that just blows my mind that this is happening under him. You got the bump stock bans and the red flag laws. There was that big rally in Virginia. Republicans suck at protesting. I mean, you remember that rally in Virginia? They had thousands of people there and they wouldn't break the line. They were all armed. They were in the perfect position to occupy their state house or city hall or wherever it was that they were at, armed but peaceful. And they just sat there and licked the boot, right? And then, so you've got a Republican president that is stepping on Republican values, the Second Amendment supposed to be their most precious. And then you've got Biden, who is writing more victimless crime and drug laws than any Democrat in history. The Democrats are supposed to be the ones that are okay with weed. The Republicans are supposed to be the ones that are okay with guns. It's kind of where we're at, you know, when we're kids growing up, what we're taught about the two parties. And neither one of them is even displaying the values of their own party. And so, yeah, I see a lot of people breaking away from that. And it's got to have something to do with how close this is right now. Just nobody wants that.
Yeah, it's insane.
We'll come to our light side.
I just realized I'm wearing my California shirt, which was not intentional, but you're in California. I don't know if everyone can read it. It says, God bless America, except California. Fuck California. No offense. I grew up there. So.
Yeah. Everybody here would agree with your shirt, trust me. And the gas is outrageous. $20 gets you like a quarter a tank here when it gets like a full tank in anywhere else, rural America. There's a checkpoint right up the road. So if we want to get out of town a certain way, got to actually go through a border patrol checkpoint or drive like a 2-hour detour around this thing where border patrol agents still sit and pull people over from what I understand. So yeah, fuck California. It's very, very much, you know, like that helicopter parents. It's very strange.
That's why I left. So you're working on a few shows right now. Tell me about those.
Well, we've finished up with the Moore Tour. The Moore Tour is in honor of or in recognition of the Moore Act, the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment Act that was actually introduced by Kamala Harris back in June, I believe. And it's a legalization bill and the first of its kind on the federal level because it actually sees to completely remove cannabis from the controlled substance list. That's incredible to me. I mean, that's what I want is a full repeal of prohibition. And most bills go for legalization, which is a highly taxed and regulated market. And, you know, I just haven't been a fan. So we went out on tour to kind of roam around the Southwest here and see, you know, what's different with the industry from here to there, the hypocrisy from say Oregon to Utah or Washington, even though they're so close to each other. And we had planned on, you know, keep going until the end of September on the 21st when they were supposed to vote on this. It was supposed to go through the House. But the Democrats who introduced it blocked it and said that they weren't going to revisit it until the lame duck session. So we kept the tour going. We've actually nestled in our final destination here at Slab City, but a lot of fun videos I'm releasing every week, just you know, it seems everywhere I travel, and I don't know if this is just like some sort of defect in my own brain, but everywhere I travel, I see something that reminds me of how, and I truly do believe this, how prohibition laws, they're destructing our entire society. You get rid of prohibition, you get rid of the police brutality problem overnight because they can't approach you unless you're being violent. You restore the family, I believe. I mean, so many families are separated or negatively affected by prohibition laws. And whether that's because dad got arrested or the stigma prevented him from going to rehab, either way you cut it, there's a difference. It you know, is preventing an entire population from entering the entire job market because they can't pee clean. So everywhere I go, I seem to see something that reminds me, well, guess what? This would be better if prohibition wasn't around. And we thought we'd make a little video series off of it. So that's been fun. And in January, excuse me, we're going to be launching season 4 of The War Room. It's war with 2 R's. We talk about the weed arrests and the ridiculous regulations that cause them. And before, what I would do is just read the articles that I published from Platoon 420. There we report the stories of the drug wars, but from the perspectives of the victims. So it's not an arrest. I believe it's a kidnapping. There's no fine. That's an extortion payment. I believe we're prisoners of war if we're put in a cage over a substance. And I use that verbiage, and the collaborators I have are doing their best to do the same. But I think I'm going to switch that format up a little bit. I want to actually read the way the mainstream media puts it, because shame on them for joining the police and criminalizing these people. It's gotten to the point when I'm reading these articles, they're no longer just reporting and kind of quoting what's in the police report. They're using verbiage that make these people seem dangerous, even going as far as soliciting grams as weight instead of ounces, say. So if somebody has like 3 ounces, that's not a lot of weed, but they'll put, you know, whatever, 98 grams. And somebody who's not familiar with weed pictures this big kingpin, right? And I'm tired of it.
One of my friends is a trial lawyer, and he was telling me that they were charging one of his guys with possession of 1 kilogram. And so in the complaint, they wrote down 1,000 grams instead of using kilograms. Like, and it was just, you hear this all the time.
It's ridiculous. Like,
This one really pisses me off too. In Texas, this guy, he had like 1/2 ounce of weed. He cooked it to get the oil out and then put it into brownie mix. And of course, cooking it, the whole apartment building reeked. So somebody called the cops. They came in, they caught it, they confiscated the brownie mix, which now weighed 1 pound, and they charged him with 1 pound. Like, yeah, it's
cop math. I'm surprised they didn't weigh the brownie pan with it. I mean, that's generally what we see. I did a story from, I think it was out of Nebraska. They pulled somebody over with a trailer, and they reported like 700 pounds of weed. And this picture of this trailer had a bunch of freshly harvested plants. It was the whole plant, like root to tip. It's not 700 pounds of weed. In order to determine how much weed is there, you'd have to pick the bud, let it dry. I mean, this plant's not even going to get you high until it's done processing, but we're still jailing people and criminalizing them for that. So I'm going to be sure to read those articles and, you know, put a Saturday Night Live-esque funny spin to this language that I believe to be wrong, but society is so used to hearing. And then I want to spend, because Slab City is full of victims of prohibition, or victims of the establishment, as it may be. Most people get sick of it and they come here for peace and solace to get away from it all. So I want to give these people a platform to tell their stories, not just to get it off their chest, but to let everybody else know that it's okay. Like, if you got busted with weed, this is not something you should be like bottling up inside and being upset about. In fact, you should be vocal about how you were victimized. And through outreach, we can begin to break through that stigma. It's how we did it with weed. It's, you know, you had Cheech and Chong and you know, How High and all these movies. And if you notice, since the days of Reefer Madness, we've been salt and peppering in, you know, these weed related entertainment things. And every generation, they get a little bit more serious. You know, Cheech and Chong were all silly and stony, but in a fun way, instead of the Reefer Madness way. So, you know, that outreach and that visibility is huge in terms of calming people down, letting them come out of that, you know, that closet, if it may be. You shouldn't be ashamed that you did a substance. If you did too much of a substance and it negatively affected your life, you shouldn't be ashamed at that either. You're human. We all do these things, whether it's with shopping or coffee or fast food, right? We go in and out of our little ruts. But being able to recognize that and not feel guilty about it in the meantime is the only thing that ever pulls us out of that. And we've prevented an entire community of people who self-medicate with substances from, you know, having that breathing room to just get through their emotions with harm reduction in mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I mean, you talk about the framing and how words are used, and it's like, you know, if you like, if I tell somebody, oh, I got robbed yesterday, oh my god, what happened? Well, I was just sitting at home minding my own business and the IRS kicked in my door. And then they're like, oh no, you didn't get robbed, you got taxed, right? It's the words that they used. And it's the same kind of thing, like when you talk about you know, somebody was arrested for a substance and like, you know, no, they were kidnapped. But it's funny, because if you try it the opposite way, like, people catch on, right? They're like, you know, you give a story of like, oh, so this guy, this law enforcement officer, he went into a bank and he went to collect money that was owed, or, you know, something like that. And then the next thing you know, the bank started shooting back at him or something, like, oh my god, like. But it's like, no, that guy with law enforcement, he wasn't law enforcement. He was like part of like a small group that was, you know, whatever. Oh no, that was a terrorist, or that was this, or, you know, he was a bank robber. And like, it's funny, like, it's obvious, like, no, this is a crime. You can't sugarcoat that. Somebody's trying to rob the bank. But for some reason, when it's the government doing that to us, they just take the sugar coating and they're like, no, that was a police officer. He was kidnapping
was
an innocent person.
It's okay.
Yeah. It's like, there's words on paper. Okay.
And meanwhile, they're using the same tactics that Al Capone and his boys did. I mean, really, it starts with the extortion. There was a story out of Northern California, surprise, surprise, where they're investigating city council and the DA for demanding extortion payments from cannabis industry, legal cannabis industry businesses, in order to get their licensure, to the tune of like $250,000 in cash from some of these dispensary owners. So they're looking into that. Of course, that's only one of many that gets caught. Now, that's illegal, right? It's illegal for that city council member to say, hey, you cannabis business owner have to give me this $250,000 under the table, or I won't let you run this business. However, that is literally done to the American citizen every single day. Even in states that have legalized, like California, say, Nevada, they've put limits on how much you're allowed to have on your person. And if you go over that limit, you're a criminal. Like, where's the line where you created a victim? Like, where's the line where there was a dangerous situation? And,
well, I mean, if you have more than that, you're probably dealing without a license and maybe growing your own, and therefore you're not giving your cut to the government, and then therefore you're a criminal.
Right. But if a tomato farmer did that, right, say you're growing tomatoes and you're selling them at the farmer's market, and you haven't paid your taxes and gotten your agriculture registration, right? They are not going to send men with tanks and guns and tactical gear to your tomato farm. They are going to send you a cease and desist or a notice to appear in court. You can go deal with it from there. There's no violence used.
Right.
Is it right?
Well,
no, different discussion. But if that's the world we live in, why is this different for a cannabis farmer? Say I decide to grow a huge field. Well, now the government wants their cut. Fine. Why are you sending men with guns to literally destroy my plants, right? Because the raid allows them to destroy everything and then demand money from me instead of just being civil about it? Like, this is This is barbaric, the way that they're treating this industry.
I kind of want to debate that point because, okay, so hear me out. A regular farmer is using regular banks, which even legal drug dealers are not allowed to use. And so when the government says, give us money, and a tomato farmer says, no, the government will just get a court order, go right to their bank and take the money out. Or an even bigger tax than what they might be paying for agriculture licenses is their property tax, which is going to be a lot more money, especially because it's a big farm. That's still like whether you take it from here or you take it from there, you're taking money from these people who have a lot of land because they're using it to make money. And if you don't pay that, they're going to come and take your land. And if you refuse to leave, they will escalate it until they get to the point where there's men with guns. It might not be an entire SWAT team, sure. Although I have seen some pretty crazy standoffs from you know, property seizures. But I think it feels you're totally right. It totally feels different. But I think some of the escalation that's there is because it's even more illegal. So like with the tomato farmer, there's just a little bit of extortion. With the cannabis farmer, there's the extortion, there's not being able to use banks, there's, you know, there's the stigma that all drug dealers carry guns and therefore they're all armed and dangerous and therefore we have to use SWAT teams instead of just sending a sheriff. All of these things, I think
these people can't arm themselves either. Let's not forget that. You can't even have a gun in your dispensary or your grow operation because of the federal regulation. So a guy with a multi-million grow operation is going to spend millions and millions of dollars on high-tech security instead of just hiring some armed guards, which may or may not be cheaper. The discrimination in this industry. Yeah, it is. It's disgusting. And you're right. Even the smallest offense, a jaywalking ticket can escalate to men with guns in your face. That's the
society. I'm not paying it. Oh, well, we're taking you to jail. I'm not going to jail. Okay, you're getting shot. And that's what they say. Like, it doesn't matter how small the crime is. Anything that they're willing to write on paper, they're willing to enforce by killing somebody. Because if somebody refuses to obey those commands, they're always willing to escalate it to that point. And that's absolutely disturbing. But at the same time, that gives them some magic power to justify what they're doing, and people just buy this. Like, I don't know. How do we convince people to stop buying this bullshit?
They get
story?
The neighbors on board too. I try. The awesome warriors in the Platoon 420 group are really good at sharing news articles, and then the trolls come out and people jump on. And you know, when we see, you know, Karen from Seattle, you know, good job, officer, for taking those dangerous criminals off the street, a dialogue starts. Sometimes a more sarcastic dialogue than others, depending on who's behind the keyboard. I think just being vocal about those things, right? Like, you see those news articles and you see those people's comments and you're probably just like me, you roll your eye and go, I can't believe people think like this. Like, challenge them. Why not? I mean, I think everybody should, like you said, challenge authority. And that includes the presumed authority that your neighbors and your peers think that they have over you, you know, in their thoughts. So authority is not just the guy in the badge. It's society telling you should think a certain way. And what I've seen in Riverside County, California, the sheriff up there is just, oh, he's awful. He's like the Hitler of weed. He's lost the support of the community because this guy initiates a raid every single Monday, calls it Marijuana Monday, blasts it on Facebook, makes this big game about it, rarely makes any arrests, but commits a whole lot of property damage. So now his tactic, because the neighbors have kind of been backing away from that because it's been so frequent for about 2 years now, I've been following this. A lot of farmers that I used to work with moved out of the area, like multi-generational land. They couldn't take it anymore. But what the sheriff's doing is he's convincing people that these illegal grows are poisoning and contaminating their water source with their unregulated chemicals. So they're bad, and they're poisoning your children now. Now the weed's not bad, community, because we live in California. And, you know, he's gotten over that hump, and now he's trying to convince folks that their water sources are being intentionally poisoned. But again, that goes back to the discrimination. You don't have access to, you know, the same luxuries that most businesses have when you're growing cannabis. So it's very frustrating. End of the day, nothing can change in the states, really, until it changes on the federal level. Until cannabis is off that Controlled Substance Act, the states don't have the full freedom to do what they want.
Right. They still I think all the steps that the states are taking are helping to push things in that direction. I think enough people, and I mean, like, and maybe this is a way to start getting through to some people where, you know, like I've talked to people who don't understand, but weed's legal. We legalized it. Why is it still a crime? What's the issue here? Oh, well, the feds have different set of laws. And like, people don't really understand that until like, oh, now it's become an issue, and they start learning about it and it affects them. I think that's where people start asking for that change. Like, they start to say, yeah, well, the feds should legalize it too, because I don't want them coming in California. We legalized it here. That you get people on board to support that, I think, at that point. So I think that's definitely a huge part of it. But I'm thinking, like, and I grew up in LA, so like I'm always like, that would be an awesome movie, man. Like, I'm thinking, and I just saw this movie. It was with Sacha Cohen, where they did a trial about the riots in Chicago, like in the 60s or 70s, which was it was a really awesome movie, by the way. But I'm just thinking, like, wouldn't it be great if, like, there was a picture of a movie, right? Where it's a trial between a cop who's like, yeah, I caught this guy with marijuana and he's going to go to jail because it's against the law. And then meanwhile, you have the defense who's basically like, yeah, forget what the law says. Let's have this debate over morality and whether that law should even exist. Like, almost like one of those like constitutional epic trials of like, oh, we're going to have to overturn this law kind of thing. But like, you know, not as a historical example of like this happened, but as like, as a really compelling way to actually hear all of the arguments and to hear how stupid the people on the side of the government sound when they're just trying to like blatantly demonize cannabis with absolutely no data to back it up, no real crime being committed, nobody being injured and all these other things, and just show how bad their argument is. I think that'd be really awesome.
That would be pretty epic. I mean, I've always made the, it blows my mind too. Like when we repealed alcohol prohibition, we amended the entire Constitution to say that making a law that prevents somebody from accessing a substance is not constitutional. But yet here we are doing it with so many other substances beside alcohol. So clearly the wording was wrong, you know, but yeah, that would be awesome if there was some filmmaker and that group of actors and actresses out there, that could be an epic challenge. Because you're right, there are so many things that can be pulled out of the Constitution, cited from different trials, that just make that argument. And there hasn't been that epic cannabis trial. I mean, there has. You've had the Alexis Bortel trials. They keep telling that little girl that, you know, too bad, you have to die, you can't have weed.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. You should call some of your LA friends.
We'll see what we can put together. Awesome. Well, we're coming up on the end of the show, but I want to give you an opportunity to give any plugs for your show. Where do we find your show? Where can we find more out about what you're doing? Anything you want to plug, go for it.
Everything's kind of centralized at platoon420.com there. We report the drug war news from the perspective of the victim. You can find some cool swag and CBD products there. That helps us going. We are a 100% volunteer organization. All of our contributors work out of the kindness of their hearts, and we're fully funded by awesome sponsors and generous donations from the community whenever we go on these little outreach tours. So many thanks for that. And in January, we'll be starting season 4 of The War Room. I think I finally wrapped my head around a correct format there. We're going to bring you some stories, and then we're also going to be launching, and I can't say much about this yet, the Patreon portion of the War Room, which is going to be called the War Room Raw. I'll leave it at that, but I'm very much against victimless crime laws, be it drugs or prostitution or nudity or anything of the sort. So I'm trying to blend some of those victimless crimes together in the War Room Raw. So that should be fun. Little teaser for you there. And that's all I've really got to talk about. No huge tours planned until summer of 2021. I was given the honor of executive director position overseeing the July 4th smoke-in. And from what I understand, GI Mary Jane's name is going to be on the next 5-year rolling civil disobedience permit. So I feel pretty proud from that. But heading back towards my hometown, DC and Baltimore might as well be right next to each other to throw a mass display of civil disobedience in our nation's capital. So looking forward to that. And I'll be organizing a street team come January. So anybody who wants to register, I will definitely be reaching out to people with boots on the ground out east to help me get that all organized together.
Tell me more about this civil disobedience permit. It, like, I'm picturing, like, it's a piece of paper that says I can do whatever I want.
So in DC, you have to get a permission slip if you're going to commit large protests of civil disobedience. I've pulled a couple out. They're free unless you're talking about big groups, at which point they ask you to pay. But they want to know how many people you expect, what illegal activities, nonviolent illegal activities that will be performing, for how long. They want to know if you have any sound equipment coming in. It's ridiculous.
I've
pulled
a few
of these out. Yeah, if you get permission, it's not illegal. Exactly. You just have to walk in and America.
Man.
But this particular permit was pulled out, the original one, in 1970. It was pulled out for 50 years. I'm assuming that it was probably free or cheap back in 1970, because a 50-year permit for this would probably cost thousands of dollars right now, if not more. And the permit says that from noon to 1 o'clock every year on the National Mall, I can light up and smoke weed, and I can't get arrested for it. It's something that I found out about in high school, and me and my friends attended it every year, of course. Why not, right? Living so close. And Richard Eastman, who was head of the shindig for the last 20 years, the team that is stepping down now, that team's retiring, and they reached out to me a few months ago, and they're like, are you down? And I'm like, of course I'm down. This is great. It's, again, might as well be my home. My activism career got started in D.C., lobbying and testifying in front of Congress, which is one of the most terrifying things I think I ever did. But easy once I got there. So, yeah, that should be fun. I gave them a 5-year commitment. And I don't know. It needs that millennial spin. The fact that you just asked about it means it needs more visibility.
Yeah.
It was big for me and my friends, but it was like one of those closet things that, like, you know what I mean, that people knew about but didn't talk about. And when you show up, everybody tried to be nonchalant about it. However, in 2018, it started getting a little bit more open and people brought their signs out. Before, it was just a bunch of people quietly chiefing on the lawn because they're still terrified. I mean, it's programmed in us, right? Like, somebody's going to come with a gun after
me.
So yeah, I just kind of want to amp that up and make sure that we can, on top of having that 1 hour of freedom and civil disobedience within the lines of this block that DC decides, that we can have, you know, a boozing event. So grassroots organizations and anybody who has a special interest in ending prohibition can come out and have a venue to pass out their material, shake hands, network. The more we all come together and the louder we all get together, the quicker we're going to get to where we want to go. So that's my vision for that. I want to bring it a little bit more out, and I want music too. Like, you can't have a hippie festival in the White House lawn without a guy with an acoustic guitar, right?
Right.
Like, that's a prerequisite.
Nice. Yeah. And you know, you're really right about the long-term effects of that that paranoia. I mean, somebody sent me a jar of this CBD only hemp flower, and I was about to get on a plane, and I was like, I'm not taking this shit on the plane. I'm gonna get arrested. I was getting on a plane to go to Mexico, travel internationally. Oh my God, I can't. And like, it has no THC in it. It's supposedly legal all around the U.S., even federally, even in Mexico, no problem. But it's just like, looking at it and knowing what it looks like, it's just like, it's this fear of like, and I probably wouldn't have gotten caught. Like, the drug dogs don't even sniff for that kind of shit. Like, they're looking for cocaine and heroin. And it's like, but it's like, it is like built into us now. And like, even walking around California, weed is legal now. And it's like walking into a store, like, I still get that kind of like, is this fucking like, is this a trick? Yeah. It's insane. But I want to thank you for being on the show. This has been really awesome. Got some insight, got some new intel on a new civil disobedience festival that I'm going to need to go check out.
It's called the Smoke-In, the National Smoke-In.
The National Smoke-In.
Not a lot of info.
I'm going to have to.
All when started is that? Before the age of the internet. So July 4th.
July. Oh, well. July 4th. I guess I know why I'll be on the 4th.
Independence
of July.
Day.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining. If you're listening and you like this episode, please make sure to subscribe on Facebook and YouTube and on the podcast channel. You can find the podcast where all of your favorite podcasts are: Apple, iTunes, Google, Podbean, and all those other things. Go check it out. And of course, again, go check out taxationistheft.info. Get some awesome swag from us. T-shirts, hats, everything else. And actually, one more thing before I let you go, G.I. Mary Jane, what is the tax that you hate the most?
You know, I've been avoiding them for so long, I don't know.
Don't incriminate yourself here.
It'd have to be the property tax. I'm going to say property tax.
Awesome. All right, guys.
And I'm going to go on that, just knowing how it's different state to state. That's what frustrates me most, is the different state to state on that one. It's nonsense.
Absolutely. In Mexico, or at least where I am, the property tax is 0.1%.
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Like, if they weren't, like, robbing everybody blind, like, if the income tax was only, like, 1%, I probably never would have started a podcast called Taxation is Theft. No. They got greedy.
It's definitely out of control these days. Yep.
Awesome. All right. I'll see you guys next time. Taxation is Theft.